Chapter 32. Awkward and Sad. Clive wasn't even surprised at this point that Queen Argana was already waiting in his office when he entered. He was only surprised that she did not have her seemingly ever-present teapot with her. "Queen Argana," he said, not hiding the tiredness in his voice.
"General Clive," she replied. "You're seeing Bridger then, I assume."
Clive couldn't help the grimace that spasmed across his face at that.
"Yes," he said shortly.
Moving behind the desk, he crouched down and tapped in the code to open one of his drawers to distract himself.
"I'm actually glad you showed up, though. I was going to ask you to accompany me."
When he looked up, Organa was looking at him with sympathy.
"A friendly face would most likely be welcome," she agreed. "You tend to look fierce even when you don't mean to."
The drawer clicked open. Reaching in, Cleve pulled out the data disk that he had been storing all the plans for the raid on. Slotting it into his data pad, he stood back up and sighed.
"I will admit, I've never cursed it so much until now."
Organa tightened her lips at his little joke. Cleve sighed again.
"I will not intentionally cause him harm," he said quietly, tapping the edge of the data pad against the palm of his hand. "Nor would I wish to cause him distress. But this is bigger than just him now. If we are to rescue those children..."
"I will not argue with you on that,"
Organa replied softly.
"I only regret that it is a necessity."
Cleve grimaced. He felt the same, but he wouldn't say that out loud. He had his duty, and he had to focus on that. Let Organa mourn for the both of them. Holding out his elbow, he offered his arm to the woman. Not ungracefully, she took it with a murmured thanks. Stepping out of his office, they began to make their way down to the main hangar where Bridger was staying, in silence.
"Thank you, by the way," she said abruptly.
Cleve cocked his head at her.
"Pardon?"
"For inviting me, I mean."
She smiled wanly.
"I've wanted to check in on him for a while now, but it always felt intrusive before. I was rather worried after the interview."
"I did not hear anything from the med bay," Cleve said, frowning as he headed towards the door. Organa shook her head.
"I'm not worried about his physical health, but rather his mental and emotional."
Her eyes seemed a little misty as she fell into step beside him. Stepping into the hallway, she expanded on what she meant.
"He was very withdrawn and quiet near the end. We did press him for 20 hours straight."
"We asked if he wanted to stop multiple times."
"But considering what he went through, would he have really felt comfortable asking to stop?"
Organa pointed out.
"Considering the emphasis that was placed on obeying his master's commands, I'm not sure he would have."
Cleve grimaced again. His stomach churned at the thought. "And the child..." No, it was in the past. And they had stopped as soon as he requested, which had to count for something. He had to keep himself in the here and now.
"It's in the past," he said gruffly. "Nothing we can do now."
"We have to stay in the present," she agreed.
Glancing behind him, Cleve noted that she seemed to have switched out her usual assistants that followed her around. Rather than the dark-haired, middle-aged woman that had been following her around previously, she now had two younger women padding behind her quietly. With well-hidden blasters underneath their matching jackets. Cleve narrowed his eyes slightly. The two women, one with blonde hair and the other with white, met his gaze with a cool indifference. Turning his head back to Organa, He raised an eyebrow at her.
I see that someone managed to finally get through to you on the necessity of guards, he said dryly.
Yvonne and Winter are merely my assistants, Organa blindly denied. Lady Valon has been feeling a little poorly lately.
Cleave rolled his eyes internally, but let her have her little fib. He didn't know why she wouldn't just come out and admit that the women were her bodyguards, but it wasn't worth fighting over. In any case, it wasn't like the women were intruding. After noting their presence, Cleave found himself forgetting that they were even there. The mark of a good bodyguard. Stepping into the hangar bay of the compound, their small group drew little attention. The arrival of Phoenix Nest and all of the smaller ships that it carried around had caused a rather rushed reorganization of the base. Phoenix Nest had been crammed to the gills with ships on its way to Yavin, and had requested that it be allowed to release some of them to stay on base, including the Ghost. And while that made things more convenient for Cleave and his allies, allowing them to question Bridger without having to use a shuttle, it had thrown the delicate equilibrium the hangar managers had created into chaos. So even walking across the hangar took a good 20 minutes. Ducking, dodging, and weaving around various technicians, droids, and ships turned what should have been a quick walk into an arduous quest to reach the ship that Bridger was living on. The chatter of nearly 100 people filled the air to a nearly dizzying level of noise, making their entrance into the open cargo bay of the Ghost a relief.
General Cleave.
Rubbing at one of his sensitive ears, Cleave nodded respectfully. Captain Syndulla, I assume you got my message?
I did.
Syndulla stood above them on a small platform that overlooked the cargo bay, as regal as any queen. She gestured to the ladder on the wall beside her.
Ezra's waiting.
Cleave nodded, dropping his hand to brush his tunic. He thought that he had brushed up against something on the way there and didn't want to go in with a large blot of oil on his shirt. And Jarrus? There was a moment of silence. Less than a second. But it was enough for Cleave to look at her again. Captain Syndulla's face was oddly still as she looked down at them.
"He's looking after the engines," she said smoothly.
Her expression was still that strange look.
"We heard some odd noises on our way down from Phoenix Nest."
Well, Cleave was not going to question this, odd as it was. It would be much easier to get the answers he needed without Jarrus glaring a hole into the side of his head. "I see. Thank you for your cooperation." He headed towards the ladder that she had gestured to. Organa and her bodyguards followed, equally unquestioning. The ship was a cozy one, clearly lived in for an extended period of time. Cleave flicked his eyes around as they entered the small room that Bridger was waiting in, taking in the bright paintings on the walls and the small scuffs that spoke to a well-used area. Bridger was sitting in front of a holoprojector with a chipped mug of some steaming liquid in front of him, wrapped up in a surprisingly thick blanket, considering the warmth of the planet they were on, looking very small and fragile. Beside him, in an unusual carved wooden chair, sat the large Lasat Garza Borelios. And on the opposite side of the room, sitting near a control panel and cleaning a blaster, Cleave felt his lips tighten. The Mandalorian. He had heard some of the trouble that she had apparently caused on the way over. He hoped that she would not intimidate Bridger into silence. For everyone, he didn't want to have to question Bridger over several days. "Bridger," he said, deciding to ignore the others in the room unless necessary. "Has Captain Syndulla explained the purpose of our visit here to you?"
"Yeah."
Bridger wrapped his hands around the mug, his wrists looking especially bony.
"She said that you're planning to attack the Academy."
He sounded surprisingly unenthusiastic, Cleave thought. Glancing over at Organa, he saw that she had noticed the odd reaction as well, her lips pressed together into a thin line.
I am sorry that this is necessary, Bridger, she said softly, slipping her skirts underneath her as she took a seat in one of the stools opposite the boy. But I'm not sure how much you've been told. We're under a bit of a time limit on planning this attack.
What do you mean?
Aurelius rumbled from his seat. His thickly muscled arms were crossed over his admittedly impressive chest.
Organa hesitated. Her eyes flicked over to Cleave. He appreciated that she didn't just immediately blurt it out. Not every politician understood the importance of secrecy, even when one was in the middle of their army. With how unenthusiastic Bridger was being, though, perhaps an understanding of their urgency would help with that.
We have less than a week to finish planning this raid, he said flatly, sitting down on the other stool.
Less than a week? The Mandalorian sounded incredulous. You can't plan an assault on a fortified position in less than a week.
Well, unfortunately, we have to, Cleave replied, keeping his eyes on Bridger. We sent a scout for a preliminary look around Drummond Kos 2 days ago. While she was there, she intercepted a transmission to the Academy. Cleave purposefully left out precisely who was transmitting. He wasn't entirely heartless, and he knew that Bridger was already aware of exactly who he had been headed to. Apparently, the Empire is tired of waiting for those still there to give in. The guards and inquisitors there have a week to force as many of the children into compliance as possible, with the rest being murdered. He saw Organa duck her head, her jaw tightening. Perhaps he could have put that better, more gently. But from the way the rest of the occupants of the room stiffened, he didn't regret it. Taking out his data pad, he ejected the data disk in it and inserted it into the holo projector they were sitting in front of. Luckily, the projector was an old, common model that he was well acquainted with. It was the work of a few seconds to call up the scans that the probes had taken. A model of the Academy sprang into being in front of them. Six tall black towers surrounding a seventh, connected at multiple points by a web of covered and open walkways and surrounded by tall walls of force fields. Cleave watched sympathetically as Bridger flinched back at the sight of the place that had caused him so much pain, despite being warned. He wondered where Jarrus was. Considering how the man had hovered before, it didn't make sense that it would put an engine over being present for the boy. But no, he had to stay in the here and now. As you can see, we managed to get several probe droids to get rather complete scans of the outside structure and parts of the inside of the Academy. Unfortunately, we've discovered that parts of the walls were shielded against sensors. He looked at Bridger carefully. We need someone who has been inside those areas to explain the floor plan of the towers so that we can move through it efficiently.
You need me.
The boy's face was pale, his knuckles white around his mug. Cleave didn't bother mincing words. Yes. Bridger looked down at his mug. Cleave waited patiently, even as he half expected Jarrus to burst into the room and demand that they leave. He could see the internal battle being fought on Bridger's face. The desire to forget, to deny the memories that surrounded his experience at the Academy, bitterly fighting against the desire to help those still trapped in that hell. Cleave was not surprised, however, when Bridger finally looked up and nodded.
Okay, he said, his voice soft and knuckles still white.
Okay. Cleave smiled. Then let us begin. You said that there were landing platforms on the tops of the towers, yes? It was several hours until Cleave was finally satisfied. Several times, Organa had kicked him in the ankle and called for a break, forcing him to leave the ship and take a walk. He did not begrudge her, though. Coming back into the ship after one of the breaks, he caught Aurelius gently rubbing the boy's back in a comforting motion. But his duty was to his men, and he had to ask all of these questions to ensure their safety. At least, as much as he could when sending them into battle.
Sometimes he regretted switching to the side with the Flesh Armies. He had never had such concerns about droids. Ejecting the data disk, with its new annotations saved in multiple files, he tucked it back into his datapad for safekeeping. Then, tucking his datapad away, he found himself fiddling with his fingers. Out of the corner of his eye, he could see Organa smoothing her skirts. Neither of them wanted to move on to the next request, it seemed.
"Something bothering you?"
Aurelius asked, after several heartbeats passed, with neither of them saying anything. He was drumming his fingers against the barrel of his bow rifle. Behind him, Cleave could hear the crackle of a droid's electroprod.
"Well, let no one say that he wasn't a fast learner."
"There is, I'm afraid, one last thing we have to ask young Bridger today." Bridger rubbed at his forehead, not looking up from the projector.
"You said you just wanted to talk about the Academy."
His voice broke a little over the last word. Cleave felt like the lowest slime in the universe.
"I'm afraid that I was not entirely truthful," he replied. Folding his hands in front of him, he took a deep breath.
"We need you to come on the raid with us." There was a loud screech of chairs scraping against the floor. The Lasat had stood up, his green eyes narrowed and flashing, but before he could say anything, "What?" Syndulla's voice was flat and furious as she emerged from the doorway, her eyes burning.
"You did not!"
Cleave held up a hand.
"I'm sorry for the omission, Captain, but I was not certain if you would even allow me on board if you knew ahead of time."
Looking back at the now very pale Bridger, he stilled his spine to explain. "Taking into account both your actions on the Pexia station and your information of how you were treated at the Academy, the concern has been raised during planning sessions that the children still at Drummond Cass might not recognize us as rescuers," he said quietly. The boy's eyes were very blue as he stared at him, almost luminous against the dark crescents underneath his eyes. "But you were one of the leaders in fighting back against your captors. If you were to broadcast a message from the main control room, do you think that they would recognize your voice?"
"You want me to tell them that you're okay?"
Bridger sounded like he had been strangled. He stared down at his hands, pressed flat against the holoprojector, and yet still trembling noticeably.
"Tell them to fight back, that it's a rescue mission, not an extermination."
"That is the idea," Cleave acknowledged. "But it all depends on whether or not they would recognize your voice. If they did, that could possibly lower casualties."
"Court it with the Criffin guilt trip, General," the Lasat snarled.
Stepping towards Bridger, he placed a hand on the child's shoulder.
"You want to keep your men safe. You don't have to blackmail the kid into this."
"And the other children," Organa interjected. Reaching across the projector, she took one of Bridger's shaking hands in her own. Behind them, Cleave could hear her bodyguard shift.
"Ezra," she said softly, "I know that this is unfair to ask of you. You've already given so much."
"Sure isn't stopping you, though,"
Aurelius growled. "But if there's any chance that this could get more people out of there alive, then we have to ask you to do it. But believe me, I have been to every planning meeting. This is the only thing we will have you be doing. If after making the broadcast you want to go back to wait on the main transport, that's okay. No one is expecting you to fight."
"I'd hope not."
Syndulla's voice hadn't changed from the last time she'd spoken. Still flat and furious, as she came up beside Bridger and placed her hand on his other shoulder. Her leku were arched fiercely in what Cleave knew was an expression of anger in Twi'leks.
But Bridger, he wasn't angry. In fact, his face was almost thoughtful. Cleve focused in on that. If he agreed.
I didn't have a chance to speak to them after I killed the headmaster, though,
he said slowly, his eyes not meeting theirs.
I'm not sure that they would even believe that it's me at this point.
We're aware of that, Cleve said. They had discussed it extensively before coming, in fact. We think that the chance that they would believe it's you is too good to dismiss, though.
Bridger bit his lower lip.
The two people looming over him just looked to be getting angrier, though.
You don't have to do this, Aurelius said, bending down slightly so that he was partially blocking their view of Bridger.
His hand flexed, squeezing the boy's shoulder.
You say the word, and royalty or no, I'll throw them out of here myself.
One of Organa's bodyguards scoffed quietly.
You can try.
Aurelius's head snapped around.
I was the captain of the Lasat Royal Guard, he said darkly, his bright green eyes surprisingly intimidating. I've probably forgotten more about fighting than you know.
I'll do it.
Everyone's head snapped back around to look at Bridger.
I'll do it, he repeated, looking none of them in the eye. For the other kids.
He curled in on himself further, even as he spoke. A victory. But Cleve knew, even as he began to thank the boy, that sleep would not be coming easily to him tonight.
Numenara stepped into the small maintenance room off of the hall and buried her face in her hands. That had been a complete and utter disaster. Pressing her back against the wall, she slid down until she was sitting on the floor. She felt numb. Breathless. Her ears were ringing and her throat felt tight. Forcing herself to take deep, even breaths, she tried to release her emotions into the Force. She was a Jedi Master. She was better than this. The arguments that had erupted during the meeting and continued until Master Windu dismissed them all in frustration were not a surprise. The divisions had been present since the fall of the Temple and were just as bitter as when she had last left the fleet. But it was useless. The tightness was spreading down to her chest. Hundreds of successful missions, dozens of won battles, the admiration and respect of her peers. And it meant nothing to her right now. Right now, she felt like nothing. No. She felt like a drifter. Like she had been blown from an airlock. Like she had fallen from a ship in a storm and now was drifting in the open ocean on Kamino. She felt like a Padawan. She felt like a child. She felt like everything except a Jedi. The fear and anger that had filled the meeting had been palpable. It had dragged along her skin, leaving trails like slugs, and abruptly reminding her why she had volunteered for that scouting mission that would take her away for so long from the fleet. Jedi should not feel like that. Numenara curled in on herself and focused on breathing, shame rippling through her. Jedi were not supposed to feel like that. Her head ached. Jedi were not that... Numenara? Numenara jerked her head up. Someone had discovered her, curled up and struggling with her emotions like a Padawan. Obi-Wan Kenobi, one of her only living creche mates, looked down at her and smiled tiredly.
You felt it too, then.
His voice held no judgment, but she felt shame ripple through her anyways. As younglings, she had always been the model held up as an example to others, while Obi-Wan had been the one to struggle with appropriate feelings. but now it seemed that their positions were reversed.
"Master Kenobi," she said quietly.
Abruptly, she felt the moisture underneath her eyes and ducked her head to wipe at them.
"My apologies for disturbing you."
Obi-Wan's hand was warm on her shoulder.
"Luminara."
His voice was gentle.
Luminara kept her gaze fixed on the floor between her feet. It was dirty and needed to be swept.
She pressed her lips together. Obi-Wan sighed softly above her.
"I understand, Luminara," he said quietly. "I understand."
"That wasn't the order I grew up with," Luminara finally said, her voice tight. "The fear, the anger."
Her voice choked on that last word.
"They're just children, Obi."
The old creche nickname slipped out from her mouth before she could stop it.
"Just children. And 2/3 of the Order would let them die for being touched by the dark side. Not even willingly touched, and they would still let them die."
Her throat and eyes were burning. She pressed her face into a hand again. Obi-Wan sat down beside her on the floor.
"They are afraid of losing even more than we already have," he said simply.
"And when did we start letting that fear control us?" she asked. "When did it start dictating our actions like this?"
Dropping her hand from her face, she turned and looked at Obi-Wan beseechingly.
"I saw his memories. I saw what the Inquisitors did to him, what they're still doing to the children under their control."
The words clawed their way up her throat.
"It is disgusting that we are even debating leaving them there."
Obi-Wan pressed his lips together.
"Miss tried," he said helplessly. "He tried to make sure Knight Katooni and her ilk had a clear platform."
Luminara looked away.
"Breathe in and out like you've been taught," she told herself.
She squeezed her eyes shut and pressed her knuckles against them.
"Like a child," she thought. "It's like I'm a child all over again."
Beside her, Obi-Wan sighed.
"This isn't the end," he said. "There will be more discussion. Master Windu's words carry much weight, as do yours. If we talk to the different leaders of the groups..."
"No."
The word burst from her lips, but Luminara knew that it was correct.
"No. They're too frightened."
She took her hands away from her eyes and tilted her head back, looking at the dimly flickering light above them.
"They are too frightened."
The words felt rotten in her throat, but tasted of truth as they passed over her tongue. She squeezed the fingers of one hand until it hurt. Obi-Wan just sighed again. Looking at him out of the corner of her eye, she saw a mix of hurt and acceptance cross his face.
"You felt it too, then?"
Obi-Wan sighed and tapped the back of his head against the wall, mimicking her position.
"Yes,"
he admitted, so softly that she could barely hear it.
"When did this happen, Obi?" she asked. "When did we stop being Jedi?"
"The fall of the temple," he suggested. "When we tried to assassinate Sidious."
He closed his eyes.
"When we agreed to lead the army? And there are so many points, Lumi. So many times when we bent our morals, when we did the easy thing rather than the right thing."
Luminara breathed in and out, like she had been taught. The silence between them stretched out for several minutes, as Luminara wrestled herself back under control. Again and again, she released her emotions into the Force, even as more welled up to take their place. Finally, though, as she pressed her forehead to her knees and scrunched the cloth of her skirt between her fingers, they slowed down into something manageable. Her breathing evened out. "I am sorry," she said into the silence. "You must have better things to do than comfort me."
Obi-Wan let out a huff of laughter.
"Helping a friend is never a waste of time."
Luminara stood up and brushed herself off. Holding out a hand, she helped Obi-Wan up from his seat.
"Perhaps, but it certainly isn't the best use of your time."
"Luminara..."
Pressing the button, she let herself out of the maintenance room.
Obi-Wan was right behind her, tucking his hands into the sleeves of his robe.
They were close to her room, actually. She would go there, she decided. Meditate on her failure to control herself. Then she would be able to focus on what she actually could do. The hallways were unusually empty. She could feel Obi-Wan's concerned looks as they walked leisurely towards her room, and ignored them. She couldn't do anything now. Arguments or not, it was clear what the general will of the fleet was, and no amount of talking would change things in time. All she could do was get herself back under control and make sure that the Order didn't lose another master.
"But Katooni, they'll never go for that. The Council will never split the fleet."
Luminara stopped, Obi-Wan bumping shoulders with her as he nearly continued on.
"What?"
Trading looks with Obi-Wan, they both moved silently further down the hallway. If Luminara remembered correctly, there was a small commissary here, rarely used outside of the occasional sleep cycle shift. Otherwise, it was left to be used mostly as a storage room, dusty and uninteresting, unless one wanted a quiet place to nap. Now that she was paying attention, though, she realized that whoever were in the room were most definitely not sleeping. No, this felt like the meeting that had just been dismissed, with emotions running high and hot like needles being scraped against her already raw nerves. How had she missed this feeling, she wondered. This mix of anger and disbelief and confinement. Luminara stopped at the open doorway, the broken pad beside it dark. Peeking in, she saw that her memory of this part of the ship was correct. The room was indeed a commissary, the wide bar where food was served still thick with dust. Or at least it had been a commissary. The long tables that normally would have filled it had been pushed off to the sides of the room, with multiple young Jedi perched or leaning on them, leaving plenty of room for the woman at the center of the group to pace restlessly.
"It doesn't matter what the Council thinks," Katooni snapped. "I can feel it in the Force. We all can, Zat. You wouldn't be here if you didn't. The Force wants us to rescue these children."
She flung out her arms dramatically.
"And yet we're supposed to be debating it like we're senators rather than Jedi."
Luminara internally winced.
A harsh view, perhaps, but not an uncommon one amongst the younger Jedi. Especially amongst those that had survived the temple massacre, like Katooni and her friends. In fact... Luminara cast her eye around the room. Not the largest one on the ship, not by a long shot, but it was crammed just as full as the one that she had just been sitting in with the rest of the council. Except that Luminara would bet her teeth that the median age here was at least 2 decades below the one in the previous meeting. She tightened her lips and pulled back slightly, to where Obi-Wan was standing beside her. His arms crossed, he raised a concerned eyebrow at her. He had heard Katooni's words as well then.
"We're Jedi," Katooni continued. "We're supposed to fight the dark side, not run from it in fear."
Luminara winced again.
She would not call what they did running. But, well, that was basically what they did. The difference was, in Luminara's opinion, that they did so more to protect those that they were hiding with, rather than out of fear. After all, it wasn't as if any Inquisitor was truly a danger to a trained Jedi. In a straight-up fight, that was. It was rather less lopsided when the Inquisitors in question were backed up with the ability to call down airstrikes at will. And ever since we lost the temple, that's all we've been doing. Katuni's voice was fierce. All we're doing is running and surviving. And I don't know about you, but I'm sick of feeling like a coward as the galaxy continues to fall to pieces around us. All right, she couldn't argue with that. Luminara understood those feelings all too well, had felt them herself in the past. If the Council and the rest of the Order won't do anything, we will. These children need rescue, and we're the ones to do just that. Peeking around the door again, Luminara saw that Katuni had her hands on her hips and was glaring fiercely at everyone around her. We have ships, and pilots, and the will of the Force behind us. So long as we manage to convince at least a few of the clones to come with us, there's no reason why we couldn't just take the ships and go to Yavin 4 by ourselves. Except, like I said, the Council is unlikely to just let us take off with them, Anatolan replied. Green skin and a missing head tentacle. It took a moment for Luminara to remember the young knight. Zat. He had been a youngling like Katuni, fleeing the massacre. He had buried his face in her skirt as their transport had lifted away from the hangar, unable to look as the droids advanced on the few guards that had given them their chance to escape. Katuni scoffed. It's not like they have a slave circuit between ships. They can't actually physically stop us. Zat scoffed right back. Yeah, but it wouldn't take a genius to figure out where we're going. And nothing would stop them from following us to the resistance base. Katuni snacked a fist into the palm of her hand. Great, she said dangerously. Maybe they'll get off their butts then. Maybe feel a little shame for not acting like a Jedi should. A Wookiee growled. Luminara remembered him well. Wookiees were not common within the Order. She had had to drag him away from the bodies of a little Ithorian and human boy as he howled in grief. Katuni glared. No, I'm not being flippant, she insisted. The Force is with us, and it wants those children saved. And a Jedi's job is to make the will of the Force known. And, oh, Luminara's heart ached at the certainty in the girl's voice. That beautiful certainty that Luminara herself had felt every day of the war, that said that even with all the murkiness surrounding her, even with Barriss's actions, that she was doing the right thing. The certainty that was ripped away as she sat in a Senate pod and was called a traitor by the very people that she had sworn to protect. The certainty she had felt walking into that meeting with the rest of the Order just a half hour before. Between breaths, Katuni's words resonated with her. A Jedi's job was to make the will of the Force known. That little statement bounced off of Katuni's previous words and Luminara's own feelings. A Jedi's job was to make the will of the Force known. When had that changed as well? Because that... Luminara couldn't remember the last time that thought had crossed her mind, even before the war. She remembered the Senate certainly using the Jedi to make their will known. All requests to the Jedi had to go through at least one senator's office before it reached the Order's ears. A Jedi's job was to make the will of the Force known. And right now,
standing by that doorway and listening to the passion in Katuni's voice, the Force sprawled heavily across her shoulders and whispered in her ear.
You are correct, Katuni. Luminara hardly recognized her own voice, barely realized that she had stepped out from her hiding place and into the room. She ignored the way people jumped to their feet, muttering in panic. Instead, she kept her eyes locked on the eyes of the girl. No, the knight in front of her. It is the will of the Force that these children be saved. Katuni had quailed slightly at the sound of her voice, but she rallied at Luminara's agreement.
Then why are we even debating this? She cried. If even the Council can feel it.
Katuni!
A female Rodian hissed. It's all right, Luminara soothed. Knight Katuni is not incorrect. She twisted her fingers in the fabric of her skirt.
Although I will say in the Council's defense that we were trying to guide us towards deciding to rescue the children.
What?
Luminara heard a sigh behind her. Then Obi-Wan appeared at her elbow. Why else do you think you were told that the meeting was starting half an hour earlier than it actually was?
Wait, that wasn't just a mistake? The female Rodian, Gunodi, sounded confused.
Luminara tried to smile. She wasn't sure if she was successful. In any case, I will admit some curiosity as to what precisely your plan is to get to the Resistance's headquarters.
Silence met her question. Reaching up, Katuni scratched at where her headdress met the back of her neck.
Well, she began, before trailing off. Now that she was facing two council members, her sureness seemed to be draining away from her, making her sway in her spot like she was a youngling again.
We were kind of discussing that when you came in.
Obi-Wan hummed. Looking over her shoulder, Luminara could see that he had raised an eyebrow. Speeches about the will of the Force are all well and good, my dear, but I find that the Force usually needs a little more planning before its will can be made known.
You said something about taking some of the fleet's ships. Luminara picked up on the point that Obi-Wan had left hanging. And while no, we don't have slave circuits installed in the fleet, I will point out that the ships that would be of any use to you do have permission codes locking their hyperdrives. If the rest of the Council saw you trying to take the ships without permission, it would only take a single transmission to shut them down and leave you floating.
Zat frowned. I knew it, he muttered to himself.
Hush!
Gunodi hissed.
Luminara traded looks with Obi-Wan.
The Force was still there on her shoulders, whispering. And she knew that Obi-Wan was feeling it too. The ships. The ships were the key. They turned back to the group in front of them as a single unit, united in purpose.
Unless, of course, the Council thought that you were leaving for another reason. Obi-Wan said carefully. An innocent reason, like practicing defense maneuvers for the fleet.
Katuni's eyes flickered between the two of them, a slow, painful mixture of hope and worry stealing across her face.
Wouldn't that be suspicious, though? She asked carefully. All of a sudden, all of us going to practice defensive maneuvers?
The crowd around them were silent.
Luminara couldn't disagree with that.
Rubbing at her chin tattoos, she thought carefully.
It would be suspicious, yes, she agreed slowly.
Technically not true. She doubted that the Council would raise too much of a fuss, just relieved that it wasn't going to come to blows in the corridors. But the traditionalist bloc was high-strung, to say the least. They were the problem here.
They were the most likely to raise the alarm if they thought that something was not quite on the level. And with how loud they could be, the council could hardly just shrug off their concerns. But it would be rather less suspicious if a council member was with you, she continued. She looked at Obi-Wan again. He understood immediately what she was getting at.
One of us, helping the younger knights work off some admirable, if misguided, energy.
What? Someone asked. Luminara saw understanding bloom across Katuni's face. And of course, if someone did try to send a shutdown command, the council member with us would theoretically be able to override that control. Luminara felt a real smile tugging at her lips. The force was swirling around her, glowing with light. Theoretically. But she quickly sobered. First, though, I think that we need to discuss just how many Jedi share your beliefs in this matter. We will need many to properly pull off the excuse of a defensive exercise. A mutter of agreement made its way around the room. Katuni nodded, seemingly buoyed up by their agreement with her views. I know plenty that weren't able to make it to this meeting, she said. I'll get them organized and ready to go as soon as you get permission for the maneuvers from the rest of the council.